listening to A Scary State, and this week we're talking about Utah. So, Lauren?
Yes, Kenzie?
Let's get scary.
Hi.
Hi.
So, you want to know what I found out today?
What'd you find out today?
It is our 18-year friendship anniversary.
Ours?
Huh?
What?
Yeah.
Today?
Yeah.
Aw.
So 11 years ago, I posted something on Facebook, and I said, happy 7-year friendship anniversary.
Wow.
18 years.
Wow. I've known you more than half my life.
I know. It's so exciting.
Yeah. Go us.
I know.
Happy friendship-iversary.
Aw, to you too. Okay, and yesterday I lived my basic girl happiness. So, my go-to Starbucks drink is a shaken iced espresso, right? Well, they have their pumpkin spice in now.
Ah, yes.
So I did the pumpkin spice cream on top. I was so happy. It is fall. We are getting there. We're so close.
We're also getting into that lovely time of year where it's cold in the morning and hot as shit in the afternoon.
Yep.
I was looking at the weather and it was like 60 degrees, 90 degrees.
I remember once in college, I left for my morning class in sweatshirt, sweatpants, bundled up, and I went to my afternoon class in a tank top and shorts.
Yep.
Yep. I do not love it, but we're getting there.
October is better because it's at least consistently cool.
Yes.
September is like bipolar.
I wish we had like real fall because here we get summer, like death summer. And then we get a week of, like, beautiful fall weather, and then we get death summer again, and then we go straight into winter.
Did we get death summer again?
Yeah. You get the little taste of fall, and then we get it, then it's hot again, and then it goes immediately to cold. Tis Virginia weather.
Yeah, I mean, it happens in spring, too.
Yeah, I know. Spring and fall.
We get, like, a couple weeks of, like, really nice, lovely weather.
I just wish we had a whole, like, month and a half of really nice fall weather.
Yeah. We also get that thing in the winter where it's, like, kind of warm for a second. So you're
Oh,
maybe it's finally going to be warm, and then it's below freezing again.
I remember there was one Christmas where I really wanted to wear a sweater and a skirt and leggings because it was a really cute outfit, and it was, like, 70 degrees that day.
When I went to New Orleans for Christmas one year, it was 32 degrees there, and I was pissed. I was like, I am in the most southern place I can think of.
Right.
And it is 32 degrees? I brought shorts. Although one of the other times I went, though, it was like 76, so it was okay. And I did wear shorts.
A little trade-off.
In December, which was great.
That must have been nice. I mean, that's what you like.
Love it. When I went to visit my mom in Florida, wearing shorts, we went to the beach on Christmas Day.
Oh, that's nice.
It was so much fun.
That's awesome.
Loved it. And that time of year is really nice because it's not humid.
Yes.
It's like the weather that you want year-round. Anywhere.
Yeah.
It's warm, not humid. It's lovely.
Because, yeah, the humidity is the death. And for curly hair.
Yeah. Or hair that doesn't know what it wants to do. And so if you straighten it, it curls. But if you curl it, it straightens.
There's no way to win.
No. I look like a fuzzy, just... I look like... My hair looks like I just walked out of bed. Like, the way that it kind of waves a little bit in some places, but still kind of stays straight. And especially now with my bangs, like, the sides will flip out. So I kind of look like I got a helmet.
Very cute.
It's not good. Funny story. So, Friday? No, today's Friday. Thursday. it was towards the end of the day. And so I was just going to put, like, a book on from Mayan, which is, like, an online thing that reads to them just, you know, for shits and giggles, essentially. And so I pulled one of the popsicle sticks that I have, and I was like, okay, like, you're gonna pick the genre. And so we're reading over the genres, and she's like, scary and gross. And I was like, okay.
Aww.
So I, like, go to it, and it's, like, you know, like, cutest animals that you didn't know were deadly, but then it also has, like, zombies, and the kids are like, zombies! And I was like, no. I don't know what's in here. And no. So we did the cutest animals that you didn't know were deadly.
Like what?
There was koala bears. There was raccoons. There was...
Koala bears?
Yeah, like, I guess they can be vicious.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily deadly towards people, necessarily. It just deadly, period.
Dangerous.
Okay. Kind of thing. Yeah. So, and then there was a couple snakes. Oh, the octopus was on there.
My blue ring octopus.
I told them, I said, this is my best friend's favorite animal.
I just love it. Yes. It's so cute.
Today for, well, you saw my Snapchat, but for those listening at home, for one of my grad classes, it's a writing class and we're doing like 15 minute journal prompts. And it was a poem from Shel Silverstein about the kid was selling their sister.
I know that one too.
Yeah. And it was like, oh, like make up a ad for something you want to sell, like your house, your bike, your sister, whatever. So I decided to sell my students. I said, do you want to be looked at as the best person on earth? Aww. Do you need more people to tell you that they love you? Well, do I have good news for you? 19 children that you can have. And I said, if they don't start telling you they love you in 2 days, money back indeed.
That is cute. Such an upgrade from the fifth graders.
Right. I said, you know, can't afford a whole class? That's fine. $250 for one child. $5 for three, 10 for half the class, and 20 for the whole bunch.
I mean, what a deal.
What a deal.
All right. So let's dive into Utah.
Oh, yeah. I'm not actually going to sell my children. Please don't. Get
out of me. Oh, yeah, that's right. Improper school. Funny. Okay. The official flower of Utah is the sego lily, and the official insect is the honeybee.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, you know. In March of 1968, in Skull Valley, 6,000 sheep mysteriously died. Though they had denied it at first, investigative reports revealed this may have been due to the army. They had conducted an open-air test of the nerve agent XV... Just kidding, VX. Just mere days before these 6,000 sheep died. In the town of Hurricane, a restaurant had a bull statue placed on top of their sign. But this bull was not appreciated at all. It had a large cone-shaped appendage that people did not find appeasing to look at. 500 people signed a petition to get the bull taken down. The restaurant ended up removing the appendage, but the bull remains. You can look at the appendage. It is really bad. Those from Utah are known as Utahns. The average age of marriage is 24 for women and 26 for men. That is 3 years younger than the national average.
Wait a minute. Time out. 3 years younger than the national average?
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, right now I should be getting married.
Yeah. Yeah, you should. But see, the average means that there are people below it and people above it. So we're okay.
I have truly come to terms with the fact that I probably will never get married.
I got married over the national average.
That's great.
No.
Yes, no. Yes, you did. You were 27. Oh, no, you got married at average.
Yeah.
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 You were average.
I was average.
I'm above. Below?
I don't know which way we would go with this.
Anyway, never getting married, and that's a ridiculous statistic, but keep going.
Yeah, it is. 62% of the state's population identify as Mormon. In order to achieve statehood, Utah had to give up polygamy.
Ha! That's funny. Oh, okay. Asterisk, pin in it. I want to tell you a funny story about the polygamy thing when I dive into my story.
Okay.
Okay.
You will not be able to find any private liquor stores in Utah. You will be able to find beer and spirits elsewhere in the state, though.
I don't understand.
Like, you won't be able to find, like, you know how we have ABC stores?
Yeah.
They don't have those.
So where would you get?
I don't know.
Do they just not have liquor?
Well, I guess they have liquor, but you have to buy it at other places. I guess they don't have a store that's just liquor.
Oh.
I don't know. I don't understand. New restaurants are required to set up a Zion curtain, an opaque barrier around their bars in order to keep children from seeing alcoholic drinks being made.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Behind Nevada, Utah is the second driest state. One of Utah's symbols is a cooking pot, a Dutch oven to be specific, making it the only state with that as a symbol.
Yeah, because that's fucking weird.
I know. A family-run novelty company named Loftus International sells between 10,000 and 20,000 rubber chickens a year.
Good for them.
Yeah. Utah is the only state where every county contains part of a national forest.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Those in Utah eat twice the amount of lime green Jell-O as the rest of the country.
You know they're not making Jell-O shots, though.
Well, a sweet treat and popular way to eat the Jell-O is to add shredded carrots to it.
Ew!
I know, it sounds disgusting.
Okay. Another funny story about Jell-O shots. So at work, we had like a meeting and our resource team was giving us a bunch of like math manipulatives and resources and things like that to have in our classroom. It was awesome. And so they're kind of showing us the different things, what they could be used for. And they pull out these containers. And I immediately go, ah, Jell-O shots. Thankfully, everyone there was young and laughed with me.
Yes.
So
I'd be like, Mackenzie, do we have to have a talk?
Right. So it's like, so after the year's over, we can celebrate with those and use them for Jell-O shots.
I saw somewhere that they say the best way to do the Jell-O shots is like you put them in the thing, you put the top on, and then you flip them upside down so that the Jell-O hardens on the cap. So that when you take it off, you just suck it off the cap instead of having to use your finger.
When we were in South Carolina in Charleston, we made Jell-O shots for the boat, which is very difficult to do when you're being tossed around like a freaking beanbag.
I bet it is, yes.
But I did it.
Proud of you.
Thank you.
So
I
proud.
Don't usually do Jell-O.
I love Jell-O shots.
Makes me want to throw up.
So mixed with alcohol, maybe not the best combination. The biggest raptor ever known to exist was discovered in Utah, so it was given the unique name of Utah Raptor. It was about 18 feet long. The first KFC was in Salt Lake City.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Richard McCoy, the man believed to be D.B. Cooper, is from Utah. Butch Cassidy is from Beaver, Utah. Florence Ellenwood Allen from Utah was the first woman to serve on a state Supreme Court and the second woman to serve as a United States federal judge.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And that is Utah.
Cool beans.
Cool beans. Oh, there was just a female, like, Alaska Native who was just elected to a seat in some political thing.
Yeah, she beat Sarah Palin.
Ha! Which is awesome.
Hell yeah.
Making history. All right, Mackenzie, what are you talking about? And also take the pin out of the polygamy thing. As you dive into your story.
Right, thank you. So, of course, as always, when I began my research, I found one thing I wanted to do, and I was like, oh, this sounds really cool. I can make a whole story out of this. And then I could only find the same story told.
The same way every place, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, not that. Then I was like, all right, let's go the haunted route. We haven't done a haunted thing in a while, like, you know. Mm-hmm. So I found, it's one of... How do you say his name? Brigham Young?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of his, not like his house that he lived in, but it was like this house. It was like some farmhouse that was in some village that the people lived in.
Okay.
And it was going over the spirits that haunt it. There was one who was one of his wives.
Oh.
And I cannot remember if it was the 2nd or the 19th.
Wife?
Yeah.
Oh.
I know that the second...
And how many did he have?
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
It might have been a son from his 19th wife, and it was the second wife who haunted it. I don't know. But she she was one of his wives, and the story goes that the reason why she left and she didn't want to live there is because she didn't want to be a part of the polygamy thing, and she wrote a whole book about it.
Wow.
Yeah. I thought that was funny.
That would actually
was like,
probably be a really good book.
I was tempted to read it, but that's not what I chose to cover. Instead, I decided to bring you the local legend of Bear Lake Monster.
Okay.
Of the Bear Lake Monster, I should say. It seems to be very well known in Utah. So for those of you listening from Utah, I'm sure you've heard this before. Yay. But if you're anything like me, not from Utah, never even heard of it.
Have you ever been to Utah?
I've never been past Texas.
Ah.
So, no.
Yeah, you have.
Oh, yes, I have. Just kidding. But no, I haven't been to Utah. I've been to California.
Yeah.
It's a little past Texas. Okay. Bear Lake is located on the border for... I was about to say India. Jesus.
We'll get there one day.
I literally just finished writing this. The story is fresh in my mind.
Maybe that's why your brain's like, I don't want any more.
Probably.
That's how I feel with this case. I've been working on it for 4 days.
I'm going to have dreams about bears and lakes.
Bears.
And monsters.
Beats. Battlestar Galactica.
Which, by the way, Bear Lake Monster, don't look like bear. Which you'll find out later.
Is the lake called Bear?
Shh. Bear Lake is located on the border of Idaho and Utah. It is about 109 square miles, 280 kilometers, and is known for its Caribbean blue waters.
Oh.
This bright blue color is caused by the limestone deposits around the lake. Surprisingly, Bear Lake is not popular for the local legend that I'm about to tell you about, But it's actually a really popular tourist spot. It has a plethora of activities to do all throughout the year. And it's obviously really pretty.
Well, it sounds very pretty.
Water.
Whoa. Whoa.
Shoshone Native Americans lived in the Great Basin region of the United States. As settlers began to explore the West, the Shoshone, like other Native American tribes, were greatly diminished from the exposure of smallpox and other diseases. Sacagawea was actually a Lemhi Shoshone who got, and she was the one who guided Lewis and Clark.
And at the museum, I always think of Sacagawea.
Whenever I hear Sacagawea, I think of that actress Sojourner Weaver.
Sojourner Weaver.
Yeah, but when I hear Sacagawea. The lake was originally named Black Bear Lake, obviously later shortened, by an explorer from the Northwest Fur Company, Donald McKenzie. Missing the A, but does have a capital K, so we'll consider it an okay spelling.
Okay.
In 1818. By the 1840s, the area of the Great Basin that was once home to the Shoshone was taken over by Mormon settlers. The Shoshone people shared with the settlers the story of this creature in the lake. The creature would capture and carry away their people. Mm-hmm. So this brings us to the first publication of the monster by Joseph C. Rich. Joseph Rich was born in Navo, Illinois, and moved to the Salt Lake area with his parents when they converted to the Latter-day Saints.
LDS, yes.
Comes up a lot.
Yes, it does.
Rich worked as a missionary in England and Wales for the church, and once he returned to Utah, he was recruited by Brigham Young to settle in the Bear River Valley in the Idaho Territory. Rich published the article about a year afterwards. The article begins with Rich telling of the legend heard by the Native Americans, and he uses the word Indians in here.
Okay.
So that's his wording, not mine.
Okay.
The Indians have a tradition concerning a strange serpent-like creature inhabiting the waters of Bear Lake, which they say carried off some of their braves many moons ago. When I read this, I immediately thought of you.
Why?
You say many moons.
I do.
You say it all the time.
I know.
Since then, they will not sleep close to the lake. Neither will they swim in it, nor let their squaws and paposas bathe in it either. I don't know what that is.
I don't know.
But that was his quote from the article. Most of the initial sightings were reported by one person. It wasn't until the summer of 1868 when Rich published his article that the story of the Bear Lake monster started to gain merit. The first sighting by a local is from S.M. Johnson. Johnson lived east of the lake in South Eden and was traveling to the Sound Valley settlement. On his way to the settlement, Johnson noticed a figure floating in the water. He first assumed it was a body of someone who had drowned, but when he moved closer to the lake, he noticed the figure was not being washed ashore. After waiting a few moments, the creature raised its head out of the water. Johnson described it as having ears on the side of its head that were, quote, the size of a pint cup.
Very specific.
Very specific. There's a hilarious description of this monster that I get to later on.
Okay.
When the water would wash over its head, the creature would spray water from its mouth and nose. The creature did not move toward the shore, but it did turn its head. Mr. Johnson believed that the rest of the body was close to the bottom of the lake because the creature never moved closer to shore.
Okay.
So it's not like a crocodile, like floating on top kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen how crocodiles swim?
Yeah.
It's so funny.
I have never in my life would have thought that I would have seen the amount of alligators I have seen because my mom lives in Florida.
Yeah. Yep.
The first time she saw an alligator, like, walking, she lost her mind. So, she was like, did you know I could do that?
These are the things you will become aware of when you live in Florida, of all places.
Every time I'm on the phone with her, no, Ariana, we can't go down there. There's alligators.
No.
Oh. Ariana's her dog, by the way.
Yes.
Which she named after one of my friends.
Oh, is that really why?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Oh, that is so cute.
Yep, yep, yep. The next sighting from Rich's article comes from a group of people who claim to have seen the monster, N.C. and Alan Davis of St. Charles, Thomas Slate of and Jay Collings of Paris, Idaho, not France, along with six women who were traveling from the town of Fishhaven to St. Charles. Their travels brought them past the lake when they noticed an odd movement in the water, about 3 miles from shore. They knew it wasn't because of the weather because there was only a slight breeze that day. Mr. Slate claims to have seen a creature that was 90 feet in length.
Jeez.
Mr. Davis said it could not be less than 40 feet.
So between 40 and 90 feet.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Because of the waves it created as it moved through the water, saying that the waves looked close to 3 feet high.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's no boats.
Yeah.
The whole party agreed that it was exceptionally large and it moved at an incredible speed. Mr. Davis saying, quote, he never saw a locomotive travel faster and thinks it made a mile a minute.
Wow.
This group also claimed that after they saw the first one, they noticed a second creature close behind. This one is about the size of a horse. As these creatures traveled away, Mr. Slate noticed they were brown in color. Rich seemed to believe what they were telling him, saying, quote, messengers Davis and Slate are prominent men well known in the country, and all of them are reliable persons whose veracity is undoubted. I have no doubt they would be willing to make affidavits of their statements.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. News spread of the reported monster, and people flooded the lake in hopes of seeing the creature themselves. Even a staff member from the newspaper was asking locals about the monster, all of them saying that they believe it is true. In 1871, it was rumored that a local had actually caught the beast, reported in the Salt Lake City Herald, quote, this latter-day wonder is said to be about 20 feet in length, so now we're back down to 20,
yep, mm-hmm.
with a mouth sufficiently large to swallow a man without any difficulty, and is propelled through the water by the action of its tail and legs. The local fisherman had created a large trap for the purpose of trying to capture the monster, or one of them, depending on if you believe that there's more than one.
Mm-hmm.
And no one knows what happened to this supposedly captured creature. In 1874, a traveler named John Goodman was traveling through Bear River Valley, and he shared his theory on why he believed there were two creatures and why they were in this lake. He shared a Native American legend about two lovers who were pursued by their fellow tribesmen, and the lovers jumped into the lake. The Great Spirit then turned them into two large serpents.
Oh, that's kind of cute.
Yeah. I couldn't find more on that. But that's okay. Local papers were divided on the issue. Some supported the stories, while others denied the existence of such a creature. Even the president of the Latter-day Saints, Brigham Young, was interested in the story. He traveled to the area, and he spoke with the locals there about the monster. The church leaders did believe that the locals saw something incredible, but they believed it to be some sort of fish and not necessarily a monster.
Mm-hmm. That's always what people think it is.
Mm-hmm. This part I thought was funny. In the correspondence, Young suggested sending a rope to the locals so that they could try and capture whatever it was that they were seeing.
Like lassoing it or something?
I don't know. It just said sending them a rope.
Here is a rope.
Yep. As any legend over time, the reports of sightings began to diminish, and the legend of the monster is still well known in folklore, but few have claimed to actually see the monsters themselves. My favorite description of the monster is from a blog post in Utah Outdoor Activities.
Oh.
A creature with a brown-colored body, somewhat bigger in circumference than a man, anywhere from 40 to 200 feet long. Its head was shaped like a walrus without tusks or an alligator's, and the eyes were very large and about a foot apart. It had ears like bunches, about the size of a pint cup. It had an unknown number of legs, approximately 18 inches long. And it was awkward on land, but swam with a serpent-like motion at a speed of at least 60 miles an hour. No one ever described the back part of the animal since the head and the fore part was all that was ever seen. The rest is always underwater.
So its head either looks like a walrus or an alligator. Those are, again, two drastically different things.
From the more recent accounts that I have, it seems more serpent-y, alligator, reptilian-like.
Okay.
Than
Reptile-y,
than a walrus.
Okay.
Some think that it is connected to the Loch Ness Monster,
mm-hmm.
and some believe that there's like a tunnel or canal or channel or whatever that goes from this lake to the one wherever.
Interesting.
Yeah. I also read this really funny article about this guy had written about the fact that all these well-known monsters have these names,
mm-hmm.
and this is just the Bear Lake Monster. And he goes around and he asks a bunch of people, a bunch of locals, what's the name? What's the name? Well, apparently, in 1996, when they had... So this place is also really well-known for raspberries. I don't know. Apparently, they have good raspberries. It's a thing.
Random. I love raspberries.
So some were saying, oh, it's raspy, or I don't know. There was,
There
was a festival, and the person in charge wanted to name the creature. And so she asked a bunch of elementary school kids, name the creature. And she said none of them were, like, mean or scary.
Yeah.
And they went with Isabella.
Okay.
Yeah.
Isabella.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, like, the, like, Loch Ness type monster in the Chesapeake is Chessie.
Yeah, they mentioned, like, the one, I think it's Vermont.
Oh.
Chaplin?
Oh, yeah. And Champlain.
Champlain?
I don't know.
Chaplin? Look like Chaplin to me.
I think it's Champlain.
It probably is.
And then there's like the Loch Ness Monster, Nessie.
Right.
Isabel.
Isabel.
That's so cute.
The other thing, because of the reason why it was Isabel or Isabella, is because apparently, as I was reading like more accounts from locals, most of the locals call it a she.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So.
Interesting.
So, sightings of the monster picked back up in the early 2000s. I bring you to 2004. In 2004, Brian Hershey had taken his boat out onto the lake. It was the start of the tourist season, and Brian was ferrying people around and across the lake. As he was anchoring his boat after the long day, he saw a couple humps about 100 yards away. Brian brushed it off to be water skis when all of a sudden his boat was knocked from underneath. I started to get scared, said Hershey. Sorry, that name is hard. There's too many sounds next to each other.
Uh-huh.
The next thing I know, a serpent-like creature shot out of the water. He said it had, quote, really dark, slimy green skin and deep, beet red eyes. He also reported hearing what sounded like a roaring bull. Brian shared his story, knowing that there would be skeptics, but Brian says that, quote, once you've seen the monster, you really don't care what other people say.
Okay.
My next story is a bit sadder, which, okay, I'm going to tell you how I found this, and then I want you to tell me what you think.
Okay.
But first, I'm going to tell you the story.
Okay.
Okay. So, on June 21st, 2008, Erica Jameson, Jan Hollis, Rose Peters, Sally Rudolph, and Mary Ellen Stewart went to the lake to celebrate Erica's 22nd birthday. The girls set up camp near the shore and began to relax and enjoy themselves. Early in the evening, they heard a strange sound. It turned out to be the arrival of Mary Ellen. The girls began drinking and celebrating the birthday girl. Jan was on a phone call when the rest of the girls rushed to her and grabbed her phone. They had decided on a no-phones policy. While tossing the phone around in a game of keep away, the phone landed in the lake.
Yes. Oh, I'd be pissed.
All the girls began to immediately look for it. Jan was worried because it was a work phone, but since it had a case, it should still be working.
If it's an OtterBox or one of those LifeProof cases.
2008.
They had those back then, didn't they?
No. The iPhone would have just come out.
Oh, never mind.
So, you know, just hold on to that tidbit in the back of your mind.
Okay.
Okay. Rose decided to get on one of the floats and go further out into the lake to see if she could find the phone.
How deep is the lake?
I think it depends on where you go. Okay. It's pretty deep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's pretty deep. The other girls were closer to shore, and a couple of them thought they felt something brush against their legs. Rose catches a glimpse of something in the water and dives down to take a better look. The other girls start to become concerned because Rose hasn't come back up to the surface. After a few intense moments of waiting, Rose finally pops back up, and she is clutching the phone in her hand. All the girls rejoice and go back to having a good time. Rose decided to stay in the water, trying to encourage her friends to join her. Around 8 p.m., Rose hears a splashing sound near her. She began frantically looking around for the source of the sound, and when she is suddenly pulled underwater.
Ooh.
The girls close to shore saw the entire encounter begin to scream for their friend. Jan takes a flashlight out of the water to try to find and save Rose. Before long, Jan is suddenly pulled beneath the water. The remaining girls scream and run back onto shore, debating whether they should go in themselves and try to rescue their friends. That's what I said when I was watching this video. I said, absolutely not.
No.
They decide that Sally will go to find an area close by that has cell service to call for help, while Mary Ellen and Erica stay back in hopes of finding their friends. While the girls were waiting, Mary Ellen and Erica hear a strange growling noise. They look back at the lights towards their campsite when a large creature leaps out of the darkness and runs right towards the girls, which, when I was watching that, I'm not kidding you, I was like, this is why I don't like to watch scary things, because I'm just going to pop out. And it was weird.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I could barely even see it, but it, like, flew into the air.
Ew.
It was crazy. So they begin to run towards their cars to try to escape the monster chasing them. Once inside the car, they realize the keys are back at the campsite.
Of course they are.
Mm-hmm. One would think that once the girls were in the car, they would be safe, but suddenly the passenger side window bursts open.
Oh.
They can feel the car being shaken back and forth as the monster tries to capture its prey. The girls were hoping to distract the monster by shining the headlights in one direction and running in the opposite direction.
Wait, but if they're...
I'm about to explain.
Okay.
So part of this episode that I was watching, there were like experts on reptiles and things.
Okay.
And they were saying that some reptiles are actually attracted to light the same way bugs are, because mm-hmm. they know that bugs and other things will be there.
Oh.
And so it's not odd to have a it be like attracted to light.
Okay.
Which is why, like, when Jan was in the water with the flashlight.
Ah.
Yeah. They did not have a chance to execute the plan when the monster was able to break into the car. The girls ran out, and as if God himself planned it, Sally was returning from calling for help. Mary Ellen and Erica were screaming at Sally to turn off her headlights. The monster began to shake the car as Sally yells at the girls to get in. Unfortunately, Sally and Erica were the only ones to survive the attack. Mary Ellen got eaten.
Got.
She got. They went to the police and reported what had happened. When police returned to the scene, they could not find the bodies of Mary Ellen, Jan, or Rose.
Ooh.
Even once the lake was intensively searched, they could not find the missing bodies of the women. So, let me tell you how I found this.
Okay.
I found one website, and it was talking about these different shows that talked about it.
Okay.
So then I started looking up those shows. Found the episode. It's called Lost Tapes.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've heard of that.
And so you pretty much see this entire, not reenactment, but this video mm-hmm. of these girls. And I was trying to determine if it was a reenactment. It didn't seem to be.
Okay.
And...
Well, then who was filming?
They were switching, taking hands. It's like, you know, Blair Witch Project kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And so when they're in the car, like, you know, they have the... What's the thing to see at night?
Night vision.
And
what, like, is it that you have vision at night?
Yeah. And, like, you can see them crying. And it's, like, it's going all over the place. So there's some things you can't see. There's some things you can. And I was with it until Rose found the phone. Because then she just held on to the phone and was using it and recording herself, which is why you see her get... And I was like, how would they have that video? There's no way in hell they'd have the video. So then I started to get skeptical. So then they're, like, freaking out. And at one point, it's like, okay, like, you can kind of see the camera drop. When it was just the two girls at that point and they were running, like, one trips and they drop the camera. And then they pick it up and keep... I'm like, no way in hell...
I can guarantee that was probably reenactment.
But okay, so here's the other thing too. Because yes, that's what I was thinking. And I was like, and so I searched high and low for all of these people. Anything, any article about them dying, nothing. Couldn't find nothing. I saw mentions of this, but no, like the other ones, there was videos, there was an article. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, these people died and there's nothing.
Dramatization.
But like, not even like a separate hand account. Like, you know, there would be a news article.
Or someone just wanted their little moments of fame and decided to make up a story.
Where three people died?
Yeah.
That's a lot. And I mean, like, they're putting it on TV.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, as soon as they picked up the camera as they were running, I was like, nope, that's it. There's no way in hell that this is true.
Were they running in their high heels too?
No, they were in beach clothes. It's just, you know, I think too, and that's why I started to look to see if I could find,
yeah,
like,
anything.
Three girls die or go missing at whatever.
Yeah.
And especially from 2008.
Yeah, there would have been, there should have been something.
Not a damn thing. But it was a cool story, so that's why I told you.
Oh, thank you.
Things interesting. The most recent sighting of the monster comes from Brent Brusen and his daughter from 2018.
Oh. So
very recent.
Okay.
They were visiting the lake from New Mexico, and as they were beginning to bring the boat back, Mr. Brusen saw a large wave about 30 yards away. He found this to be strange since there were no other boats around to cause the waves. Soon after seeing the wave, Mr. Brusen sees the creature come out of the water. Mr. Brusen's daughter turned in time to see the creature come out of the water again. She said that she could see this huge black serpent come out of the water, and she saw the creature, what she called serpenting, so like, you know, up and down, in and out of the water. When they brought back the boat, they shared with the men in the shop what they saw. The men pointed to an article that was hung up on the wall telling the tale of the Bear Lake Monster. When Mr. Brusen's daughter Googled it later on, her and her father agreed that the Bear Lake Monster was definitely the creature that they saw.
Hmm.
Stories like these have been shared across centuries. Locals can recall great-grandparents sharing stories of seeing the Bear Lake Monster. From visitbearlake.org, here's a list of what I assume are more well-known sightings. So we start off with William Budge, May 1874. Lawrence Heer, 1940. Glade Myler, 1961. Ruth Bassett, July 1974. Mike Harvitz, 1977. Mark Carrington, 1980. Brad Chapman, June, 1981. Milton Seeley, 1980s. Darren Pugmire, 1983. David Sidwell, January, 1987. Teresa Andress, May, 1991. Robert Dalen, March, 1993. Justin Hall, November, 1999. Great month.
1999?
I said great November.
Oh, no, I don't know.
Yeah. Brian Hershey, June 2002. Erica Jameson, Jan Hollins, Rose Peters, 2008. So they're on this list. And yeah. Then Brent Brusen, 2018.
That's a lot.
Right?
There are a lot between the 70s and 80s.
Yeah. There is also a movie coming out.
Oh.
In 2024.
Oh, is there?
Yes.
What is it called?
I don't know.
Oh. But it just says the movie's coming out.
It's just a movie, and they're going to have people that are going to go, you know, typical scary movie.
I bet the acting is going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, well, I mean, if it was anything like the video that I watched, it just, I was like, there's no way in hell that they would just be recording the entire experience. Like, no one would want to hold on to that.
No.
The whole time.
No. No, they wouldn't.
And there's no way they could have gotten the one from the phone.
No.
Because I was gone!
Yeah.
But it was still a cool story, so that's why I shared it. So, if you decide to visit the area, maybe don't go in the water.
I will probably avoid the water.
And that is the legend of the Bear Lake Monster.
I wonder if there are any sturgeons that live in there. Like, sturgeons are those really big fish. And it's like every lake monster, they always were like, oh, it's a sturgeon.
So they have, you know, all the specialists and smart
of course.
Sharing ideas. And a couple of them were saying, like this one guy who's a cryptozoologist.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He said that it could be from the Ice Ages.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then there were such things as marine reptiles that weren't dinosaurs.
Why'd you write this down on a piece of paper?
Because I was watching the video, and I didn't want to click back and forth between the screen. It was much easier if I just wrote it down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And they move into shallow water, and people don't see them, which is why, you know, we thought that maybe the girls were going to get eaten. And I, like, that's the other thing. When the girls felt something on their leg, I was like, it is barely above your ankles.
Mm-hmm.
There's no. So that's, obviously it didn't happen then either, but still. So lizards can be attracted to the light, the light, because that's where their prey is. That's why.
That is actually really cool.
I think that's it. There was another video that I was watching where, I don't know what he was. He seemed like maybe some sort of ranger person thing. And he was talking about like all the things, like kind of explaining away.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, this person probably saw a school of fish. Like these fish travel closely together. Like if your sonar picked up on it, this is what it might be. And then the other people are like, I saw one creature and it was one thing. And
yeah.
It was very interesting. I really could have kept diving because there was other episodes of other shows where these two people like go out onto the lake and I'd watch a short clip of it on YouTube and then it cut off before I found out the ending. So then I was going to go buy it. But then it was getting late and I had to come here. So I stopped. And even the Brian story, I only had a snippet of it from the video of the girls. Mm-hmm. Like, it showed him, like, telling his story to, like, the news or whatever. And so it was going to be really short. But then when I was looking for anything on the girls, I found the article from 2004 about him. And see, I was like, see, that's what I mean. It was 2004, 2018. Mm-hmm. Like, those stories I could find multiple things on.
Yeah, but not that one. I could not
find a damn thing on this. Besides the fact that it was featured on this TV show.
Yeah.
So.
Suspicious.
Suspicious. So if you know of any of these people and this story is legitimate, let us know. Because this was the story that I was like, okay, if I didn't believe it before, I definitely believe it now. I don't know. When people, like more than one person sees the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
And like who collectively in a group says, okay, guys, we're going to make up this story.
I mean, it could happen.
It could, but like.
Yeah. That's a lot of trouble.
That's a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
It's a lot of trouble.
Well, very interesting.
Yeah. My neck hurts.
I'm sorry.
I need to face you.
Okay.
Okay, I'm ready to listen.
Mackenzie has her arms crossed staring at me very intensely. This is actually kind of exciting. Okay. All right. So today.
Do I need to mentally prepare myself like I did for that last story you told? Is it going to be scary? Am I going to be terrified?
No.
Okay. Cool.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about the family of David. So I wanted to start with a quote from Lieutenant Roger Kinnersley of the Salt Lake City Police on Friday night, August 11th, 1978, during an interview. He stated that, quote, "If this is a homicide, we're dealing with the single largest homicide in our city."
Jeez.
So Charles Bruce Longo was born on November 9th, 1938 in Yonkers, New York, to parents Frank Longo.
Yonkers.
I know. to parents Frank Longo and Luann Longo, and he had a younger brother named Dean.
I know somebody with a last name Longo.
Hmm. Is their parents named Dean?
I don't know them that well.
Oh.
I just know of them.
Luann was an Episcopalian, and Frank was a lapsed Catholic.
Not the people that eat fish.
Though neither of Charles' parents were very religious, they still attended the Episcopal Church every Sunday. At this church, he was also an altar boy and was a convincing boy growing up. One time, while running away from home, he was able to convince a police officer to give him enough money so he could hop on a bus to his grandparents' house.
That reminds me of the Criminal Minds episode where there is a young boy, like, can't be more than 13, 14, and he's, like, wiggling his way into family homes because he's a kid, mm-hmm. and he, like, murders all of them.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, he was able to get on the bus with the money that the police officer gave him.
There you go.
At 17, Charles joined the Army, other sources say the Marines, and he was first sent to Korea, then Fort Bragg. But Fort Bragg is a military place, so I don't know.
Wait, he was first sent to Korea?
Mm-hmm. Then Fort Bragg.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like stationed there?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Well, like, yeah.
Okay.
While
what year is this again?
We are in, like, or mid-1950s.
Okay, so it could have been for the war.
It could have been, yeah.
Okay.
While he was there, he trained as a paratrooper. This is also where he met some Mormon soldiers and really started to focus on the Mormon religion.
Mm.
He began attending church with these soldiers and began reading some Mormon literature. He was discharged in 1959, and this is when he told his parents about this new enlightenment in his life, Mormonism.
Hmm.
He stopped drinking and smoking. He started working full-time in LDS or Latter-day Saints activities. He had studied the Book of Mormon so well that no matter the situation, he was able to have an appropriate quote from the book.
Oh, good God.
Yeah. He even started to go as far as saying that because his family did not see the truth of the LDS Church, that they were all doomed to hell.
How can you be holy and in the same breath tell people they're going to hell just because they don't believe in...
I know. And what's even more, he looked his godmother straight in her eye and announced he was no longer her godson.
Ouch.
I know.
I want to be a godparent.
Okay. When I have kids, I'll keep that in mind.
I'm not Catholic, though. Neither are you.
No, I know.
Do you have to be Catholic?
No, because I have godparents, and I'm not Catholic. Huh. And my parents aren't Catholic.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't have any. That's because my mom's Jewish.
Exactly.
So.
Charles became a devoted member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and in 1960, he had even gone on a mission trip to Uruguay. He was a respected member and was very effective in recruiting new members to the church. But soon he was released from that role after he started to hear voices.
Oh, geez.
He returned home to his house in Yonkers and was hospitalized for hepatitis and other mental illnesses. And after
Wait a minute. Hepatitis is not a mental illness.
I know. So hepatitis and mental illnesses that he had some of. And after all of that, in 1961, Charles enrolled at Brigham Young University as a Spanish major. This is where he met a woman named Margit Brigida Erickson.
Oof.
This is also when Charles had a revelation that Margaret was one day going to be his wife. She was born on November 4th, 1939 in Sweden to parents Nils Erik Bond Erickson.
Nils?
Yeah.
Huh.
Erik Bond Erickson.
How did they spell it?
N-I-L-S.
Oh.
Yeah. If it was your way, I would have been like, oh, my God.
No, my way is German, so.
Ah, yeah. We're in Sweden.
Yeah.
And mother Magda Dorothea Rosquist. And they have an S, Q, and a V next to each other. Very weird for the link. So Margaret was baptized in the Mormon faith when she was 18 in Sweden. She was a soft-spoken person and had a quick and unskeptical acceptance of the LDS Church and the teachings, which made her an ideal member because she never questioned anything.
Mm.
After meeting Charles mid-semester, Margaret dropped out of school, and not long after, in 1965, the two got married. She wanted to be the wife who would support him and his church work and be the perfect LDS wife. This is when the revelations really started and when he started to speak out about these. So first, Charles saw that he would be a key figure in the church. He also blessed his first son, who him and Margaret had had at this time, to be a prophet. So this made people mad, obviously, like some random guy is saying that his son is a prophet.
Which is a little hypocritical because that's how this whole religion started in the first place, was that someone decided that this guy was a prophet and the son of God. Just saying.
Charles then started to demand that he be paid the tithing that the church collected, which is 10% of a member's income. It's like a donation you make to the church.
Oh, wow.
10% of your income.
That's a lot.
I know.
I literally would have to stop going because I wouldn't be able to afford it.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
I thought this stuff was supposed to be free.
Okay. Mackenzie.
Sorry.
He demanded that the money go to him rather than going to the church. Mormon officials later stated that Charles would also try to warn them of impending disasters and that he again demanded a share of the church's revenue. The church had had it, and in 1969, Charles was excommunicated.
We went to the moon in 1969, not 1968, but a year later.
I don't know that song.
It's from Even Stevens when running...
Oh my God. Yeah, the you know, yep, yeah. I can picture it too.
She forgot to do it and she.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Unlocking that memory.
I was waiting. As soon as you said 59, I was like, oh no, I can't sing for that. And so I was waiting to see if you would say.
If I would go chronologically. Yeah. So his friends truly believed that Charles was a prophet as well. They believed in his revelations and what he spoke of, so they stood by him. They too were excommunicated.
I love you. With all of my heart. But if you started saying that you were a prophet or whatever, no.
Rude. In 1970, Charles legally changed his name from Charles Bruce Longo to Emmanuel David. Yeah. This name change came from Charles truly believing he was a descendant of the House of David, like the biblical David. His wife also changed her name to Rachel David. This is more at the time when Emmanuel was saying that he was God, Jesus Christ, and the Holy Spirit all in one. Different branches of religion believe different things. So there is certain branches that do believe all three are one, and then there are different branches that believe all three are three separate things.
Because that's what I was always confused about every time my dad maybe got to church. I was like, wait, is Jesus God or is he the son of God? Is there two? Is there God?
Did he have twins?
Is there a God and then there's this guy? And like they both just have the same powers? Like they like, you know, co-god together? I never understood.
Yeah, so some, it depends on kind of what you believe in. So okay. Some believe that it's all one, some believe it's three separate entities. Yeah. Emmanuel believed he was all three.
Got it.
At this time, Emmanuel and others who had followed him were living in a place called Monty and were living communally with a group who actually ran and worked at a knife factory.
Ooh, not good.
About 12 adults and 21 children lived here for about 3 years. All sharing a one-bedroom house.
No!
This house actually also acted as a knife-sharpening workshop.
Oh, good Lord.
Around this time, David started to don a very specific look. He had a beard, long hair, and he was, quote, getting fat. Literally a quote from the article. And I guess living with people who own a knife company was beneficial, because for him, he would carry a 3.5-foot sword and would often claim that, quote, a time would come when it would be used to lop off thousands of heads. Those who actually saw the sword. Those who actually, oh my God, those who actually saw the sword. What is happening? Those who actually saw the sword unsheathed.
There you go.
Thank you. Were supposed to die. So meaning if it was ever unsheathed, you were going to die.
Oh, wow.
During this time, he would often visit his parents' home in New York. And during one of those visits, he straight up told his mom that he was the Holy Ghost. His mom had some words, but the main feeling she had were that she felt sorry for him that he felt that way because she was not convinced.
What a great response.
He then offered to have her come live with him on the one condition that she, his mother, follow his rules. His mother declined that tempting offer. Mm-hmm. From that point on, Emmanuel never visited again and only called his mother to give her updates on he and his family's life. Mm. Emmanuel's mother had stopped providing financial assistance to her son some time ago.
Good for her.
So it was a shock to her when Emmanuel called and told her that his family had occupied the whole top floor of the Holiday Inn Hotel and that he had all of these plans to buy extravagant items. It eventually led his mother, Miss Longo, to inquire how and where he was getting all of this money to afford all these things, knowing that he was unemployed and not getting money from her. He would simply say, "You'll see."
Oh, no.
That time staying in the Holiday Inn is what led to his family beginning to move from hotel to hotel all over the country. So at this point, they've had more kids. They're a bigger family now. They would start off as being great guests. They would pay up front for their stay in cash. They were respectable tenants, but then they would start to rack up a bill, a big bill, and either be asked to leave or evicted with large tabs unpaid. Over time, the source of the money, this extravagant lifestyle, and how David, Emmanuel, had this much of an income while being unemployed came under investigation. Some money was believed to have come from Rachel's brother and parents who lived in Scandinavia. And some, a large amount, was believed to have come from the followers that David's cult started to accumulate.
Wait. Hold on. Sorry, I have a question. Mm-hmm. So he has his family, mm-hmm. but he does have people who are also following him.
Yes.
Okay.
But they don't live with him.
Okay. Why did they stop living in the house?
I don't know. Okay. It didn't really go into that. And it also, at this point, didn't go into where all the other members were living.
Got it.
It just went into where he was living.
Got it.
So one name in particular was, and this is a name, Sterling Peacock.
What a great name.
Who later became known as Matthias David.
Ugh, you should have stuck with Sterling Peacock.
That's literally, I said, Sterling Peacock was honestly a much cooler name than the one he has now. So as you can start to see, all of the members of this cult started to change their names, with their last name always being David. So anywho, in 1978 in Utah, Matthias, at the time Sterling, was eventually convicted of federal wire fraud and was sent to Terminal Island Penitentiary. Wire fraud is a form of financial fraud where telecommunications or information technology is used. So you're sending it, like, mm-hmm. over things. So how he did this was, he called an old friend of his who lived in another state and told him that he had a 9-year-old relative who had gotten into an accident and was suffering paralysis in the hospital.
Wow.
He was pleading for that friend to give him a donation to help with his relative's high medical expenses. The friend of his sent the money. Well, there actually was a little girl who was at a hospital suffering paralysis, but Sterling didn't know her, and there were no familial connections to this girl. So the donated money didn't go towards medical expenses. No. They went to Emmanuel. So the conviction was that Sterling had used interstate wire to defraud someone of money. He was sentenced on May 3rd to 5 years in prison. Another member, originally Gil Hibben, now Peter David, also faced
federal... That's probably a better name anyway.
For that one, yeah.
Yeah.
He also faced federal charges of fraud for the same reasons of raising money and sending it to Emmanuel. And one other group member, whose name I could not find, also did something similar, which would help explain how he had such large amounts of money.
Right.
And Emmanuel had an earnest, commanding, and courteous voice while preaching and talking about his interesting beliefs, which could be how he had a true following of people who believed everything he said and truly believed what he claimed and preached. Those followers were known as the Family of David. So a little into some of the beliefs they held. Emmanuel truly believed he was God, Jesus Christ, and the Holy Spirit all at once. He told those who would listen that he was also the son of David the prophet, and that he himself was both a prophet and the Holy Ghost. So he's like five people here.
No, oh,
he believed that the men who helped give him money, so Matthias, Jonathan, and Peter were, oh, I guess Jonathan was the other one. they were archangels, so he named them Michael, Raphael, and Gabriel. Wow. Archangels. So he renamed them Michael, Raphael, and Gabriel. He talked about the Mormon church and how at first they had accepted him and helped convert him, but when his beliefs began to change and went against the church, they excommunicated him.
I mean...
Yeah. He said the Mormon church was inspired by the devil. Some of the impending disasters he talked about included a giant cloud descending over the Mormon temple in Salt Lake City. Bolts of lightning would rain down, with one of them splitting the church completely in half, and then the entire building would be consumed by fire.
I mean, that might happen, but not for the reasons that he thinks.
Yeah. Yeah. So if that didn't tip you off, the Book of Revelations was a major importance to this group.
What does that mean?
The Book of Revelations?
Yeah.
That's like the book in the Bible that talks about the end time. Like, the world ending.
Oh.
Like, that's that book.
Oh.
Which, it's, like, the fire and the monsters and the demon
coming up. Like,
the
four horsemen or whatever?
I think so.
Is that part of that?
I think so.
Okay.
So that's kind of where the whole, like, the giant impending cloud and the bolts of lightning.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you ever seen This is the End with, like, Jonah Hill? Yeah. That. Everything is the Book of Revelations.
Got it.
Yes.
That's all you had to say.
Yeah, there we go. He also, of course, talked about how they're baby. Sometimes, you know, your mouth just doesn't work.
Hello, baby.
He also, of course, talked about how he was going to be very wealthy very soon. He had told a friend, Skip Daines, that he would be so wealthy that he would be able to march right down to the Salt Lake City malls and buy $1 million worth of socks. Socks.
There are so many other ways that I thought that sentence was going to go.
Yeah. And as I was reading the article, I was like, did we mean stocks? But then you wouldn't buy stocks at the mall. So I don't.
He means socks.
Must really be important about these socks. He also showed that friend a colonial estate in Phoenix that he was planning on buying. An estate that was a measly $8,800,000.
Measly.
$8,800,000. That's it. He had a signed purchase order of $320,000 worth of rare imported china. He would go to a Rolls-Royce dealership regularly to study the cars. And once a year, he would drive to a Salt Lake City house he liked that was almost on 2 acres of land. He would go up to the house, ring the doorbell, and tell the owner that he admired their house and would like to buy it. They never sold it to him. He just would go tell them all the time.
That's fucking weird.
He is weird. He was the kind of person that you wanted to talk to. His younger brother, Dean, had once said that Emmanuel could sell a fridge to an Eskimo.
Oh.
Yeah. So I have a little bit about life that members talked about. There wasn't a lot, but a Spokane woman grew up in the cult and talked about her experience. First off, she is no longer in contact with her parents, who are still part of the cult. She said that growing up in the commune, she was periodically beaten. She recalls... Yeah, she recalls one time when her and the other children were laughing. Emmanuel took off his socks, I guess his $1 million worth of socks, and stuck his bare foot in her mouth.
Oh my God!
I know. Sometimes adults would simultaneously pull on the arms of the older children in different directions until the child would, quote, scream in agony. It's bad.
Oh my God.
It's bad. Some ex-members said that Emmanuel would frequently separate men from their wives and children. An ex-member named Paul Chipman said that over the years that he followed Emmanuel, he was ordered to leave his wife and 7 daughters for extended periods of time. He would be sent on missions to D.C. and other areas. He and his wife would also give their paychecks to Emmanuel. Chipman said, quote, "I can tell you this much. I had spiritual experiences in that group. Spiritual, I guess, doesn't mean it's necessarily from God. But they were experiences to keep you hooked, to keep you thinking that if I had this experience, then this must be right."
Fair.
So for a year or more, the family, which consisted of Emmanuel, Rachel, and their 7 children, had been living in the International Dunes Hotel on the 11th floor. This was just another hotel added to their long list of hotels they stayed in. The family was described as loners, though. The children were homeschooled, or I guess motel schooled. They were taught right there in the hotel room. Hotel staff said that the children wouldn't speak to anyone unless they were given their father's permission. Like, they would say something to them, the kids would look up at their father, and if he said yes, they could reply. They never used the hotel pool and remained primarily in their hotel room. If they ever did leave the hotel, the whole family followed behind Emmanuel in a single file row like ducklings. And all of the boys had their long hair braided just like their father. What?
That's just fucking weird.
Yeah. For those who knew the family, they would describe the family as being bright, well-dressed, and very polite. They also had absolute faith in their father, his powers, and his beliefs. Artwork had been left in the hotel room as well, which included pictures of ordinary-looking landscapes and other ordinary-looking drawings. But composition books were also found in which the children had written things like how their father, the holy man, was going to save the world, and phrases like, quote, "Praise thee to Emmanuel, king of holiness, our father."
Oh my God.
They also wrote about how they believed their father could destroy California, something he thought of, like, he thought he could do it just by focusing on California, he could destroy it.
And so now he's got superpowers.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, of course.
Right.
And they actually hoped that he would do this. Also, the hotel room was about $90 a day, which means that it is estimated that the family spent around $30,000 to live in the International Dunes Hotel, which for over a year isn't far off from how much we pay in the D.C. area for rent for a little over a year.
True.
But, you know.
True.
The hotel staff said that every day, Emmanuel would come down and pay, and each time he would pay with a nice $100 bill. But instead of saving money, every evening, the family was ordering takeout from fancy Salt Lake City restaurants. Side note, over the years, the hotel changed names and ownership, going from the International Dunes Hotel to the Shiloh Inn to the Holiday Inn Express as of 2015, if people wanted to know. Mm-hmm. That investigation I talked about earlier continued with the FBI looking into how Emmanuel had this much money to spend on the hotel and meals, mainly considering the fact that he was still unemployed. The FBI came to believe that Emmanuel's life was funded both legally and illegally by his many followers who believed he was a prophet. So Emmanuel David had committed wire fraud, and on July 31st, 1978, he found out that the FBI was coming for him and he was going to be indicted for wire fraud along with other violations of the law that he had committed, like tax evasion. Surprise, surprise. He went to his friend, Skip Daines, and asked if he could borrow Skip's truck. David drove his truck to the mouth of Emigration Canyon, hooked up a hose to his tailpipe, dragged that hose to a window of the car, and completed suicide from carbon monoxide poisoning.
Oh my God.
He didn't want the FBI to charge him. It is believed that he had learned from a friend that the FBI was coming for him and they were going to arrest him. Many believe that his ego was too large for him to face jail and he would rather die than go to jail.
That makes sense.
Just a few days later, Wednesday evening, Rachel received a phone call in which she was informed about her husband's death. After hearing the news, Rachel expressed both excitement and concern.
Excitement? Damn.
She spoke about how she feared how she would be able to pay the bills and take care of her large family.
Mm-hmm.
It was believed that the family didn't know how to function without the patriarch and leader of the family, Emmanuel. After his death on July 31st, just 4 days later, at 7:21 a.m., this gets really bad.
Oh, no.
Rachel took her children out to the balcony of her 11th floor suite, and, trigger warning, one by one, she threw them and pushed them over the edge. It's really bad. So the smallest ones were simply picked up and thrown. Some of the older ones actually held onto the balcony railing, and Rachel literally pried their fingers off. The oldest children, and probably the most brainwashed of the children, willingly jumped. after all of the children Rachel followed. Apparently, they had made a pact with David to join him in the afterlife. Horrified bystanders stood below, watching as this horrific tragedy unfolded right before them, unable to do anything to help. As the children were jumping or being thrown, people on the street were yelling no and yelling stop. But when it was Rachel's turn, those on the street were yelling, jump, jump, you bitch, jump. All eight had jumped from the 11th floor balcony. Five died on impact. Three were still alive. Two of those children made it to the hospital but died shortly after arriving. The children who passed away were Elizabeth, age 14, Joshua, age 13, Deborah, 12, Joseph, 9, David, 8, and Rebecca, 6. Mm. But one daughter, a 15-year-old also named Rachel, actually survived the fall, though she was critically injured. She was taken to the hospital with both legs broken and injuries to her pelvis, arms, jaw, teeth, tongue, shoulders, and spleen.
Tongue?
I guess biting it.
Oh, yeah.
Police Officer Kinserly, who I've talked about before, said she was, quote, about as bad as you can get and not be dead. The whole family is buried together in Taylorsville Memorial Park Cemetery. It is believed that Emmanuel had built, quote, such impenetrable walls against the outside world that when he died, they had no choice but to follow him. The officer I spoke about and quoted at the beginning, Kinserly, said that this was not a mass suicide, but rather a criminal homicide. Yeah. He read part of the definition of a second-degree murder according to the Utah Criminal Code. It says, quote, depraved indifference to human life, recklessly engaged in conduct which creates a grave risk of death to another and thereby causes the death of another.
I mean, she threw her kids off the balcony. That's murder.
Mm-hmm. And then the ones who willingly jumped, it was still that, you know, they had mm-hmm. to do it.
Mm-hmm.
He went on to further say, we are classifying it as 6 homicides and 1 attempted homicide. Both Rachel and Emmanuel's deaths were ruled as suicides. So Rachel was the 15-year-old daughter who survived. While at the hospital, she received the equivalent of over 5 complete blood transfusions.
Oh my God.
Her hospital bill at that point in 1978 was $8,500.
That's it?
In 1978.
But for all the things that she's got going on?
I wonder what that is. We'll do the money conversion.
Oh, I'm sure it'd be insanely expensive. But I thought you were about to say like $800,000 and $8,500. I mean, I know she has no money, but still, that's probably what we would have to pay after insurance.
Today, that would be $38,624.
See, that sounds...
Well, yeah, so it's the equivalent. So that's how much in today's money.
I know, but I was just expecting the number to be way higher than but what we were going to say.
That didn't include the cost of the 10 hours of surgery she needed. Surgery that was so complicated that the chief surgeon said that he refused to even guess the cost of the procedure.
Oh my God.
Uh-huh. She was still not conscious when she was taken off the ventilator a week after the incident. Doctors said that she had a 50-50% chance of making a full physical recovery, but that the mental recovery would be much more difficult.
Oh yeah.
Well, Rachel never did make a full recovery. Today she is bound to a wheelchair and still has some mental difficulties that she has to deal with daily. She was interviewed about the incident years later when she was in her 30s. To this day, she still believes that her father is God and that one day he will return to the earth.
She's, I mean, if that's what you have going into your brain mm-hmm. from infancy.
Like, you never had anything else.
Didn't have exposure to anything else.
Yeah, because they were homeschooled.
Yeah.
So there was nothing.
There's no way to be able to break that.
No. She said that her father told her that he would be back and he never lies, so she knows he will be back. An interview she had with the Deseret News said that Rachel still follows a suicide order and has attempted suicide several times.
Oh.
She was also one of the siblings who had willingly jumped, and she believes that the deaths of her family were ordained, meaning that, you know,
yeah.
it was good to go, it was what they should be doing. So the cult today. Many are worried that the cult that led to the largest murder-suicide in Utah history didn't die with the leader in 1978. As of 2000, 22 years after the tragic deaths of the David family murders, the cult that Emmanuel David started, so creatively named the Family of David, still has members living in Spokane, Washington, and Aurora, Colorado. These members living in Colorado have all legally changed their last names to David. Those members, who still believe as little Sarah does, that David is God, they are actively preparing for a second coming. Rachel David, the one who survived, was 38 in 2000. After Rachel recovered from her fall and was released from a foster home, she went to live with her uncle, Jacob David, previously Lennart Erickson, her mother's brother, who had already joined the cult at this point. Rachel lives in a trailer with her uncle Jacob, his 3 sons, and his wife Ruth David, who was actually the leader Mateus's former wife.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. What a tangled family web.
Yeah.
They live in the Denver suburb of Aurora. In 1997, the group's leaders, Jacob David and Mateus David, signed a testimonial letter that outlined the group's doctrines and included their beliefs that they were reincarnated biblical figures to include Moses, Abraham, Adam, and Eve.
Moses is my religion, so get your own.
Jacob believes he is the reincarnation of Abraham, and Mateus believes that he is the reincarnation of Moses.
Those are Jewish.
So I wanted to go over some of their other beliefs that were outlined in this doctrine.
I'm pretty sure they're Jewish.
Yeah. Well, they were in the Old Testament, which is part of the Bible, too.
Well, right, but like...
I feel like all of the religions have all the same people, just different.
Different names.
Because you, yeah. Jewish has Jesus, but he's just a prophet. He's not the son of God, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. You're not the person to ask.
Right. No, I'm not the person to ask. I say that this was my religion as if I know that Moses...
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. I have no idea. But I know it's not, you know, they have the Old Testament, but it's not what they follow. It's the New Testament.
They don't follow anything.
That's true. You're right. What am I saying?
People nowadays just choose what they want to believe, and that's it.
I mean, there was a king.
We're not going to talk about that.
There was a king that literally rewrote the Bible.
Yeah.
King James.
Uh-huh.
Just because he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of this is made up, and the points legit don't matter.
We're going to piss so many people off.
Well, you know, if you're a good person and you do things right, then there is nothing wrong with what you believe in.
But yeah.
Everyone we're going to piss off are going to be the people who believe in the crazy things that are mean to other people.
Yeah.
And I really don't care about pissing those people off.
Okay, valid point.
So there you go.
Valid point. So I wanted to go over some of their beliefs that were outlined in that doctrine, as well as some of the things that the Spokane members said in interviews about their group. They believed that white people are the real Israelites and the true children of God.
See, people like this. If we piss off people like this, I don't care.
These are apparently beliefs that come from the so-called lost books of the Bible.
Wait, so did they just say that white people are from Israel?
Are the real Israelites and the true children of God.
White people.
Uh-huh.
From Israel.
I guess so.
Okay.
Well, you know Jesus is always depicted as a white man.
Which also, again, like...
Wouldn't work from
would not work where he was from.
Yep. The Star of David doesn't belong to the Jewish people, but rather belongs to Emmanuel David.
That's where I draw the line.
They denounce Mormons and Catholics as the Antichrist. Jacob David, 64 years old, is the brother-in-law of Emmanuel David, or of his wife. He was quoted saying, quote, "We are regular Christians. We are Israelites from the lost tribes of Israel, and this is God's star." He says this while pointing at the Star of David hanging around his neck. Another leader named Matthias David, who was 56, said that the current members won't be repeating the murder-suicides that took place in 1978, but he doesn't consider the deaths to be a crime. He said, quote, "What I believe in is David and Rachel and their family. They could not be apart. When David left, they left with him. That was their choice and a shock to us." And about the group, he said, quote, "Emmanuel David is God, and I know you don't believe that. The Star of David, that's the Lord's star. It doesn't have anything to do with the Jewish people at all. It's the Lord, Emmanuel David's star."
Wow. They really just decided to make up whatever.
But they're all going off of the lost books of the Bible. That are lost.
But they found it.
The so-called lost.
Can't be lost if someone found it.
Yep. Matthias says he doesn't belong to a church or a cult. He belongs to an extended family.
Oh, Lord.
The group says they aren't trying to convert anyone to their religion. Just giving information about it should people ask. All of the dozen or so members of the cult keep in constant communication with each other and will even have campouts often at Priest Lake in Idaho to meet up and connect. An interesting little tidbit, though. So I was looking through a million old newspaper articles,
mm-hmm.
and there was a little teeny box that talked about Ted Bundy. It literally said, "Bundy seeks damages." Like, just casually in this. It was just...
That's weird.
It was, like, shocking. You know, like,
yeah.
This thing was happening, and Ted Bundy was...
Well, because we learn about historical things in isolation. We don't learn about them. Well, I mean, we learn about them chronologically, but it's not like, you know, if we're learning about ancient civilizations, we're learning about one ancient civilization at a time.
I thought it was wild.
It's like Martin Luther King and Anne Frank are born in the same year.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. It's so weird.
Historical timelines that just cross and it's wild.
And so I wanted to end this on a little bit of a spooky note. So, actually, after the awful events that took place...
Wait, you wanted to end it on a spooky note?
Yes.
As if it wasn't already?
Well, it was sad.
Okay.
This is spooky. So, after the awful events that took place in the hotel, guests and staff actually started to report paranormal activity.
Mm.
Guests would be woken up by the cries and screams of children and the sound of a woman wailing, which is so sad. The sound of laughter can be heard in the indoor pool, and a pinball machine is said to operate on its own. Others have reported actually seeing the children running up and down the halls of the 11th floor.
Oof.
It is believed that if someone experiences an awful and tragic death, they may have a hard time moving on. So it would make a lot of sense why the children are still here, unable to move on.
Yeah.
But that is the story of Emmanuel David and the David family murder-suicide.
Crazy.
Right? Like, I did not think there would be this much information on it. So when I found out the hotel was haunted, I was like, great, I'm going to have a lot to talk about. Then I dove into the case and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so sad. And it's like, yeah, the biggest like murder, suicide, homicide thing that has ever been in Utah's history.
You know, I'm all for believing what you want to believe in, even if I think it's weird or whatever. As long as it doesn't infringe.
Hurt people.
Right. As long as it doesn't hurt people. Like, my belief is, as long as it doesn't infringe on my rights, do whatever the hell you want.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start hurting people or telling me that I have to be a certain way because that's what you believe.
Yep.
Or whatever. Or this is right and that's wrong. I'm like, no, that's right and wrong
for
you.
Mm-hmm. Not for me.
Not for me.
So, yeah, that is Utah.
If you haven't already, you should watch the Keep Sweet, Pray, Obey.
I know. I need to.
I want to talk about a fucked up story.
And then something, it's called like Under the Banner or something, the banner. It also is kind of in that realm. Mm-hmm. So those are two things. Joe and I have a movie we want to watch tonight, but tomorrow. Because there's this movie called Men, and I've seen the preview of it. It's a horror movie.
Oh, yeah.
No, and a podcast I was listening to, one of the co-hosts was saying like, it is one of the scariest movies she's ever seen. And I was like, we'll see about that.
Have fun.
Thank you.
I did shamelessly plug the podcast for my grad school class.
Ooh.
We had to do an introduction video, and it was like, say an interesting fact. And I was like, shameless plug, I have a podcast.
Yep. Oh, I do it all the time.
So one of the girls in my class commented on it, was like, that's really cool that you have one. And she mentioned one that she listens to. She's like, it's like the only one I listen to, but, you know.
Add this into your rotation.
Right, exactly. So.
And speaking of the podcast, one of our episodes hit 1,000.
Woohoo!
Which is really, really exciting. So thank you so much. That's just really awesome.
I had a dream last night that we had 100,000 followers on Instagram.
Oh my God, that would be amazing. Make it happen, people. Yeah, so if you're listening to us on Spotify, just go up to the top and tap 5 stars. That would be awesome.
Follow us.
Follow us, rate us, and review us on all the things.
Tell everybody you know.
Yeah.
All the time. Post constantly.
It will not annoy us, I promise
no,
you.
We will repost, retweet, re-whatever.
You can bring it up to us, and we will be excited that you want to talk about it every single time.
Yeah, we had one follower send us a meme, which was great.
That was amazing.
It was so cute.
It was awesome. So cute.
So thank you for that. If you have any fun meme ideas,
send it our way.
Send it our way.
All right. Well, I think that's all we have.
Oh, also be on the lookout on Instagram because the closer we get to spooky season.
Oh, yes. We're going to do some really fun episodes in October. We're really excited for. So keep an eye on Instagram for that.
Because we may need your help.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Well, stay scary.
Stay safe.